Pseudopod, episode 133, March 13th, 2009. This week's story, Grave of Ships, by Richard Marsden. This week's Pseudopod is brought to you by Audible. With a library of over 40,000 titles, Audible are offering you a free audiobook download to try them out. So, go to audiblepodcast.com/pseudopod and claim your book now. Hi, welcome to... well... yeah, it's us. It's the Weekly Horror Podcast. I'm Alistair, your host, and this week's story comes to us from Richard Marsden. Richard is a native of Canada, but he currently resides in Arizona, who teaches history, holds a master's degree in land warfare, which is massively impressive and more than a little intimidating, and this is this story's first appearance. Your narrator this week is Ian Stewart, so get a little closer to the fire and get ready to be told a tale. It sounds tall, it sounds unlikely, but I promise you, it's true.
Grave of Ships by Richard Marsden.
I know you come from the States, and you see this Isle of St. Mary as nothing but quaint. Well, we is a quaint folk, and content to be, in our cups down at the Bishop, or working in the fields, or tending to the tourists, or pulling fish from the sea. But as your kin, I'm to say that the Scilly Isles hold secrets. Every day some of them are shown, but only the wise would know it. Only an islander could tell you of it. And I want you to listen, because you're my kin, and so you'll be told of the Isles of Scilly. If you look out from any portion of St. Mary's out to the wide grey sea, you can gaze at the Grave of Ships. The isle's not friendly to outsiders who sail, and never has been. It was in 1707 that a whole treasure fleet was dashed onto the rocks and drowned many a soul, including Shovel, the lord of that ill-fated expedition. Since then, the Crown hasn't much use for Scilly, or the government we have nowadays. Since Shovel's treasure spilled on our beaches, along with the bloated bodies, the isle has claimed hundreds of other vessels, some drawn too close by storms, others lured in by wreckers with their false lights and their sharp blades. To this very day, we of St. Mary cheer when a ship strikes the rocks, for it means fat cargo to wash ashore. The shoes on my feet come from a merchant vessel whose fate it was to be ripped open by silly sharp teeth. We aren't entirely a cruel lot. We save the stricken crews, but what cargo is lost is cargo found, and cargo found is what decorates every home here. What touches our beaches is ours. When the tide is low, stand upon the granite rocks yonder, near the unknown cairns, and you'll see masts and bows, sterns, smokestacks stained red with rust, all jutting out at strange angles, all acting like tombstones, or maybe warning markers. As far as your eye can see, you'll note the wrecks, some new, some old, and very plentiful. Oh, yeah. There's even a ship out there from one century, straddled atop one from another, so cluttered is the grave. And when the tide comes rolling back in, the ships are swallowed up once more by the hungry sea. The razor rocks wait just beneath the great waves for another victim to gut herself. The winter weather is fierce here, my kin. Even with all the modern works and that, few ships had sailed near Scilly, lest they end up in the grave. In winter, only one ship comes here, and they call that the Grim Reaper. Not even Cylonian makes her runs, trapping all us islanders on our little rock to while away the cold days till warm weather brings the tourists again. You might wonder why I live here, when none of your other kin do. Why they call the mainland their home and this place queer. Well, for generations some of your line has called this place home. But why? You might think that with the sea as cruel as it is, and Scilly with her submerged fangs, it had frightened any man, but no. No, and here is the secret I have for you, one not to share. Scilly is alive. The islands all owe their stories close. St. Mary's is where we live. Tresco, over there on that way, where the flowers grow and plants from the tropics flourish. Summers is warm, just as winters is cold. There lies the Eastern Isles, and no man lives there since the men of that place tried to sail away with a prize offered up by Scilly. Fools, the lot of them, to take what the island gave and try to return it. They perish for their greed. Scilly lives, my kin. Her weather keeps us warm most days, and crops not to be found on the mainland grow healthy here. And when the sea turns rough and cold, she rewards us with spoils of the man-made sort. She eats and devours. Her stomach is the grave of ships, but she vomits up cargo for us. If a man respects Scilly and lives among her isles, then he has no need to fear her. The rocks are our rocks, the sea is our sea. The grave is our grave. The winter is just her time to feed, and the summer her time to give us her bounty. You give me a look. You think I'm touching the air, or that too much of that bishop's bitter's gone down my throat? Well, I don't hold it against you. You don't live here, and as an outsider you'll think everything I say is strange. But I'll tell you a tale of how Scilly loves her men, and protects them. I don't sail too often these days. My little ship, with its ragged sails, is hard to man on me own, and I don't need fish from the sea as I once did. But many years ago, when I was young, day in and out, I'd brave the waters of Scilly to find my meal. Locals would sail out even in poor weather, and outsiders think us mad for it. But the list of Scilly's drowned and dead is few. We have a kinship with our island, and she doesn't claim us lest she must. Less for a purpose. On a stormy day, a ship I once had scraped along one of Scilly's teeth as I plied the grave of ships. The brush was light, but her teeth are ready to bite into metal. Wood stood no chance. Too far to swim, and water was pooling in my ship. Wind was fierce, and the sails not catching as I would like. I was young then, and didn't take heed of the old men who said Scilly loves her own. Just a saying, I thought, a phrase and no more. The water flooded faster, and the ship started to list, while rolling waves bounced me about like a cork in a bathtub. I worked feverishly, but had in my mind made my own peace. I would drown. Then from the shore, I see a gig. A gig is a local craft, a longboat of sorts, with six oars to speed it along. I see the hunched over shapes of men in yellow slickers with broad hats rowing like mad. Waves seem to part for them as their coxswain belted out his rhymes, his voice shouting down the wind and water. Like a bullet they sped, and none too soon. As my little boat started to slide down, ready to sleep forevermore along the other countless hulks, the gig slewed up beside me. The men drew in their wooden oars, and as the weather turned yet more terrible and black, they hurried me aboard their craft with outstretched pale hands. I was stowed between them, framed on all sides by men in yellow slickers with their broad hats low over their faces. They paid me no mind once aboard, nor did the coxswain address me. His rhymes came, and back in the oars dipped to challenge the waves. The sea was wild. But they guided the gig about and ploughed through the ocean back to the shores of St. Mary. They made no sound of complaint as they dipped their oars. No curses came from the efforts they must have put in, and still not one acknowledged me. Soaked through and cold, I could only shiver and wonder at my good luck to be seen by a gig from the land. On and on they rowed, me amongst them, shuddering and chilled, with the rain falling heavy and the sky becoming pitch, lit only by a few white-hot flashes of lightning. To the shore we plied, beaching the gig on some soft sands, framed by the slick granite rocks of St. Mary. Safe as I was, I thanked them, but they made no answer and kept their heads low. The coxswain wouldn't look at me. Oars held aloft, they were still. Statues they could have been. I meant no offence, and was unsure if somehow I'd caused it. I scrambled from the boat into the sand and staggered back, once more offering my thanks. Without them, I would have surely drowned. No answer. Two men leapt from the sides of the narrow gig, and with a strength that amazed me, they pushed, guiding the gig not further onto the land to store it, but back out to sea. I was amazed, and any words were lost to me. Rubber boots splashed, and back into the gig the two went. Oars drove like spears into the ocean, and the rhymes of the coxswain sang out. They rowed, my kin, back out into the darkness, into the storm from which they'd plucked me. Well, we told you that we are, by and large, not a cruel lot. Wreckers no longer lure ships in ready to slit the throats of any sailors who survive their ploy. When a ship's stricken, the islanders will save its crew if it can. Nice fine white motorboat, modern and new, waits on a pier for just that purpose. But I was saved by a gig. Well, not unusual. But we are fond of the craft. We have gig races yearly. Races in honour of the times of old, when gigs would brave the sea to save the souls of those about to be devoured by Scilly. They were white ships, with red slashes painted upon their bows, so that the doomed might see them clearly and rejoice at being saved. The little gig, which rowed madly back into the sea, was a white ship, and upon her bow was a streak as red as blood. Before I lost sight of them in the gloomy darkness, lightning crashed, the faces of the men lit up. They were men, and nothing was strange about them, except perhaps their dress, an old style not seen in a long while. But I tell you this, my kin, when that flash of lightning gave illumination to their faces, I jumped back as if the bolt had struck me in the heart. One of the men who rowed, his face I saw. He had me in him, or rather I should say, I had him in me. And you do too. Scilly protects its own. The last rescue gig to brave the grave of ships was 100 years ago. 100 years ago, 7 men went to the bottom on that last run, thought tragedy at the time, but as salvation now. Just as I call you kin, so must you call the rower I saw the same.
The Soul Cages by Sting was pretty much the first album that I listened to that had a serious impact. The second was the Greatest Hits of the Sisters of Mercy, and I'm honestly not sure which one damages my cool more. Anyway, I am of course aware that this forever shoots down the dreams of the last few people out there who thought I was even remotely rock and roll, but you know what? I'm okay with that. It had the impact it did because it's an album about, amongst other things, shipbuilding and what it's like to live by the sea. Now, as Sebastian the Crab will tell you, living under the sea is awesome, but living next to it, well, you spend a surprising amount of time trying to make sure it doesn't kill you. There are two songs that have really stayed with me even now. All This Time is an immensely jaunty, happy track that deals with Sting's seething rage at the way the death of his father was treated, and the way that death was reflected and mirrored in the gradual collapse of the shipping industry. It's shot through with black humour, and manages to contrast lines like, "If Jesus exists, how come he never lives here?" with a kind of desperate jollity, that sort of thing you get where people are dancing, because if they're not dancing, they're in the fetal position. The real standout for me, though, is The Wild Wild Sea. It's an incredible minimalist piece of music, and it uses elements from the rest of the album to tell a story about what happens on the dividing line between land and sea, dreams and reality, life and death. A dividing line, to some extent, I grew up on. It's a beautiful piece of music, and I'm not going to insult you, or indeed it, or certainly not Sting, because he's huge, by spooling out any of the lyrics, but Richard's story covers very similar ground for me. The sea is something you live next to, never with. Something that you will never understand, and if you're lucky, will never notice you. Of course, as this story points out, if you're very, very lucky, sometimes you'll find what you need, out there on the waves. Or perhaps you'll find me, floating on a piece of wreckage. You'll drag me aboard and tend to my wounds and choose not to ask about the pirate medallion around my neck. Then you'll ask what I want, and I'll say, We need money. You see, the donations you send us pay our web server costs, our file hosting, and our authors. They keep us running, they keep us afloat, and we not only can't thank you enough, but we need them. It's really that simple. So if you like this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. I promise you will not regret it, not even for a second. Let's talk about Joe Hill. After the magnificent heart-shaped box carved him a serious niche as a new horror writer last year, Hill could have rested on his own considerable laurels, or indeed those of his father, one of the legendary horror writers of all time, one Mr. Stephen King. Instead, Hill has produced 20th Century Ghosts. It's an anthology, and I have to say it's an anthology of some of the most unusual and profoundly horrible horror stories you'll read this year. It shows just how good, in fact, Hill is at short form as well as long form pieces. The mundane collides with the supernatural and the hideously, boundlessly evil in a dozen stories that you will remember long, long after they've finished. My own personal favourite involves a disconnected telephone that rings every night, regardless. 20th Century Ghosts is available from Audible now. Register today, and you can choose a free audiobook from their range of over 40,000 at www.audiblepodcast.com/pseudopod. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial, no derivatives, attribution license, a very long name which I'm increasingly thinking we should try and set to some form of barbershop music. And Pseudopod thinks if it happens again, it will worry, because only a strange ship should fly.